Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text Number 1. Brahmavacha.
Brahmavacha.
Yato si me jasu chiranna no deha bhajam.
Yato si me jasu chiranna no deha bhajam.
Nagyayate bhagavato gatir ityo vadhyam.
Nagyayate bhagavato gatir ityo vadhyam.
Nanyat vad asti bhagavan apitan na shuddham.
Nanyat vad asti bhagavan apitan na shuddham.
Maya gunavyatikara yadurur vibhasi.
Maya gunavyatikara yadurur
vibhasi. Brahma uvacha.
Lord Brahma said.
Gyataha, known. Asi,
you are.
Me,
by me.
Adhya,
today.
Suchirat,
after a long time.
Nanu,
but.
Dehabhajam, one who has a material body.
Not.
Gyayate,
is known.
Bhagavatah,
of the personality of Godhead.
Gati,
course.
Iti,
so it is.
Avadhyam,
great offense.
Na anyat,
none beyond.
Tvat, you.
Asti,
there is.
Bhagavan,
O my Lord.
Api,
even though there is.
Tat,
anything that may be.
Never.
Shuddham,
absolute.
Maya,
anything material.
Maya is material energy. Guna vyati
karat,
because of the mixture of the modes of. Yat,
to which.
Uru,
transcendental.
Vibhasi,
you are.
Translation, Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how fortunate, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the Absolute. You exist as the Supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. The title of the chapter is Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities who are conditioned by material bodies is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. Different people have different theories regarding the supreme cause, but none of them are genuine. The only supreme cause is Vishnu, and the intervening impediment is the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord has employed his wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world, and the conditioned souls, illusioned by the same energy, are thus unable to know the supreme cause. The most stalwart scientists and philosophers, therefore, cannot be accepted as wonderful. They only appear wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord. Under illusion, the general mass of people deny the existence of the Supreme Lord and accept the foolish products of the illusory energy as supreme. Paragraph. One can know the supreme cause, the personality of Godhead, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, which is bestowed upon the Lord's pure devotees like Brahma and those in his disciplic succession. By acts of penance only was Lord Brahma able to see the Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and by realization only could he understand the Lord as he is. Brahma was extremely satisfied upon observing the magnificent beauty and opulence of the Lord, and he admitted that nothing can be comparable to him. Again, Prabhupada repeats, only by penance can one appreciate the beauty and opulence of the Lord, and when one is acquainted with that beauty and opulence, he is no longer attracted by any other. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Param Drishtva Navartate. Final paragraph. Foolish human beings who do not endeavor to investigate the supreme beauty and opulence of the Lord are here condemned by Brahma. It is imperative that every human being try for such knowledge, and if anyone does not do so, his life is spoiled. Anything that is beautiful and opulent in the material sense is enjoyed by those living entities who are like crows. Crows always engage in picking the rejected garbage, whereas the white ducks, usually he says swans, do not mix with the crows. Rather, they take pleasure in transparent lakes with lotus flowers surrounded by beautiful orchards. Both crows and ducks are undoubtedly birds, birds by birth, but they are not of the same feather. Gyatosime jasuchiran nanu deha bhajam na gyayate bhagavato gatir ityavadyam nanyatvad asti bhagavan apitan nushudham mayagona vyatikarad yad urur vivasi. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you are the only knowable object, because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the Absolute. You exist as the Supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. This third canto of the Bhagavatam is one of the major places where the process of creation is described according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. The last chapter of the second canto, chapter 10, gives a list of the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or 10 topics that are within a Mahapurana, and this is one of them. The process of creation, which tells us many things. It discloses who Krishna is, or Lord Vishnu here in this case. It describes the relationship between the energy and the source of that energy. And it also discloses what's the role of someone who is acting as an agent of the Supreme Lord in matter of creation, or for that matter, anything, any service that's done in the world. Brahma's original preceptor, the activity that he's contemplating, just the previous verse, is describing, he's contemplating creating a universe. So he's undergone his tapa, and he's seen Lord Vishnu, and the verse is, Lord Brahma, being thus surcharged with the mode of passion, became inclined to create. And after seeing the five causes of creation indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. So we also do things. We don't create universes, but we do things. And what Brahma is teaching us through all of this is those things that I mentioned already, but he's demonstrating, showing by example, how to take up any task. Because he's Krishna conscious, he's offering prayers to the personality of Godhead. He's bringing his prayer is, it's an address. It's there are words that are spoken, but prayer is something more deep than just words that are spoken. It's a heartfelt address to the Supreme Lord, acknowledging his position, and thus by so doing acknowledging one's own position. In this case, Brahma is acknowledging his own position. We can learn from that how to apply ourselves in the activities that we undertake. There's three parts, or three paragraphs in the purport. Prabhupada is first addressing the importance of the living being to seek out the cause of all causes. And Prabhupada's statement is, most people don't. And Brahma says they're most unfortunate if they don't. Prabhupada says they're thoroughly condemned by Lord Brahma in this verse. So one should seek out. But then also Prabhupada is indicating that there's many different theories regarding what is the supreme cause. But though amongst those different theories, none of them are genuine. On what basis does Prabhupada make that statement? He makes the statement on the basis of authority. And here the authority is Srimad Bhagavatam and Lord Brahma. And based upon their authority, Brahma is saying positively and negatively. Positively is, you are the source. And anyone, negatively, is anyone who sees there's some source beyond you, well, he's mistaken. There isn't a source beyond Lord Vishnu. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the Absolute. So, those who propose something else as absolute, however exalted such persons may be in this world, the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita don't give much credibility to those persons. Prabhupada would regularly not give much credibility to those persons following Krishna's words. He would say, fools and rascals. And some persons would say, Swamiji, why are you speaking so strongly about them? You can say they're just mistaken. Fool and rascal to some in substance of mistaken. Fool and rascal. Because Krishna says, Avajananti Mamudha. Or mayaya pratigyana. While their capacity may be intellectual, that capacity that's misused is misleading. And innocent people become misled by intellectuals who are mistaken or fools and rascals. And how is it that that all happens? It happens because of the illusory energy of the Lord. They only appear to be wonderful, such stalwart scientists and philosophers. They only appear to be wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the wonderful illusory energy. So we're getting a picture here of two options: be an instrument of the illusory energy or be an instrument of the superior energy. Brahma is appealing to the Lord that he, when he undertakes this act of creation, or in our case, when we take up whatever it is that we do, let us, by the mercy of the Lord, be instruments of his internal potency. It doesn't happen kind of like automatically or just put on a dhoti and tilak, or and all of a sudden it's devotional service because you're dressed like a devotee. It's the consciousness that's what's important. And recognizing our position as the instrument of the Supreme, who is the cause of all causes, beyond which there is no higher cause. What the whole chapter is about, this prayer is the beginning of a series of prayers where Brahma is praying for the creative energy of the Lord. He's recognizing you are the bearer of that creative energy, and I want to create. So kindly bestow upon me your mercy so that I can do my service unto you. Let me be your instrument. Nimittam matram bhavya savya sachin, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is being asked by Krishna, become my instrument. This is the other way around. Brahma is appealing to the Lord, may I become your instrument. But the instrument of whom? One needs to know the cause or the source. In the next paragraph, it's almost worth reading it again, but what Prabhupada is first saying is, to know Krishna, the personality of Godhead, it's only by mercy, causeless mercy, which the Lord bestows upon his pure devotees. Then they can know Krishna. And then, the very next sentence, Prabhupada writes, it's only by acts of penance only was Lord Brahma able to see the Garbhadaksha and Vishnu. So it sounds like a contradiction. Is it by mercy or is it by penance? And if you read the language carefully, the language is indicating it is only by mercy, but to be a recipient, a qualified recipient of mercy, one has to have purity. Because otherwise, one can receive mercy and not recognize it at all. A classic example is Krishna's entering into Mathura, and the various personalities who he encounters respond to him in various ways. He asks the washerman, and the washerman insults him. He asks the florist is happy. He asks the weaver is happy. Kumcha is very happy. More than happy. But it's the same Krishna. It's the same mercy. So, mercy is an opportunity. And then one has to receive the opportunity in the proper way. One has to be fit. And therefore, this is where the penance comes. In the language of Rishabdev, it's tapo divyam. Rishabdev is advising his sons, don't make the mistake of using this human form of life like an animal and simply pursue sense gratification through the medium of this human form of life. Don't do that. Rather, the human form of life is meant for tapo divyam, through which one becomes purified. Tapo divyam puta creator satvam shudyat. One becomes purified by divine penance. So that's the indication. By divine penance, by acts of divine penance only was Lord Brahma able to see Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And Then he realized who he was, as indicated in the verse. He's that source of Brahma himself and of anything else that would come into being by the instrument of Brahma serving him. So, two things. If that purity is not there, then there's covering. And through the medium of covering, one sees things in a distorted way. Rishabhdev also teaches that. As long as there is acceptance of the body as the self, the influence of the modes of nature will be there, and when the influence of the modes of nature are there, one's consciousness is colored. And when one's consciousness is colored, you can't distinguish things properly, or you distinguish things wrongly. And one's life is misdirected. The life that's misdirected brings suffering. So Rishabhdev wants his sons to have that covering, misconception, modes of nature, misguided life, to be relieved from their existence, and path of purity to be their existence. Second point is that Prabhupada is weaving into this the attraction for material objects. He's pointing to this Bhagavad Gita verse 259. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehinam rasavarjam rasopyasya. He just puts the last, param drishtva nivartate. That is, when one has this shuddhyad, this purified consciousness, then there is no longer any attraction for material objects. So the deluding potency, is, here's an object, I'm deluded, let me see if I can be the enjoyer of this object. By the desire of the living entity to enjoy objects, sad asad yoni jamasu purusha prakriti stohi bungte prakriti jagannat karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni jamasu. We bring about our own misery by our false attempt to be the enjoyer of objects of this world. That's how the illusory energy works upon the conditioned soul, but the illusory energy doesn't work upon the liberated soul. It's a different phenomena altogether, having to do with the consciousness of what is the source of happiness. If the source of happiness is get that object, bring it together with your senses and find pleasure, the deluding potency acts. And the same object, same living entity, in the spirit of, I am the instrumental servant of the Supreme Lord, here is something the Supreme Lord is providing as an opportunity for service unto him, the deluding potency doesn't act. But the internal potency is acting. And one can see things as they are. And one can see the Supreme Lord. So, Brahma is saying, this is because of the tapo divyam, the voluntarily accepting a practice whereby I don't do this and I do that. I don't engage in contacting objects of the senses for enjoyment. I do engage in purifying my existence so that the mercy of the Supreme Lord can enter into my life and I can see him. And there's no object of happiness that can compare. And when that object of happiness that to which nothing can be compared is experienced, the objects of sense gratification are no longer distracting, because they're not seen as objects of sense gratification. They're seen as opportunities for service to Krishna only. The final paragraph, Prabhupada is again emphasizing human form of life. It's imperative to search for this. And those that don't search for this, then they take anything that is beautiful and opulent in the material sense as facility for enjoyment. Those persons are like crows. Not a complimentary caricature. What does he mean by that? Crows always engage in picking at rejected garbage. Crows do that. And crow-like people do that. That is, somehow finding some pleasure and some separated energy of the Lord, and let me see what I can squeeze out of that separated energy of the Lord. So it's crow-like behavior. And the swan-like behavior, metaphorically, they take pleasure in transparent lakes with white lotus flowers, surrounded by beautiful orchards. Their mentality is different. The swan-like persons want to be in an atmosphere where service to Krishna is what prevails, and there are other swan-like personalities who are similarly engaged, and their interest is not picking through the rejected garbage of objects of this world, seeking happiness there. Their interest is the topics of the personality of Godhead. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a Paramahamsa Samhita, a literature for swan-like persons, at least who aspire like that. And to become like that, you can't turn a crow into a swan, but you can turn a crow-like person into a swan-like person by gradual training, by this process of Bhagavad Dharma, hearing about the personality of Godhead, including that it takes up so many chapters of the Bhagavatam, so it must be important. It is important, the subject of creation. What's the relationship between God and the world around us? It needs to be understood quite clearly so that there's no lingering expectation that it's up for grabs for enjoyment. It's not. Should be seen in a different way. An opportunity for service. Okay, I'll end there, see if there's any discussion.
Maharaj, part of the translation was, you are the only knowable object. Would you kindly explain that?
Yeah. It's a truth in one way of looking at truth is the source of other things. So So the absolute truth is that which is the source of other things. So other things may be knowable, but in a Vedantist sense, that truth which is knowable is subordinate to another truth. It's the effect of a higher cause. So you are it's another way of saying you are that truth or source from which all other truths emanate. You're not a relative truth. Relative truths are dependent upon the absolute truth. You are that absolute truth upon which all other truths are dependent.
I was trying to understand how illusory energy you were talking about, it acts on the person's six sense enjoyment, and it doesn't act on the person who doesn't see the sense enjoyment. I was trying to understand that.
I was trying to explain it. Want me to say it again? Is that what you're asking? Here's a little table. It's just matter, just innocently sitting there. It's not doing anything. In the consciousness of a living entity who is in the mood of enjoying Krishna's property, Krishna's energy, this little innocent table can act in such a way it deludes a living entity, although it's inert matter. Or, you know, any other object that somebody might wish to become the enjoyer of. You make a list. Somebody wants to enjoy this, somebody wants to enjoy that. Some object that somebody wants to enjoy. Matter is not just innocent, inert object. There's potency to delude the living entity. There's potency to delude the living entity because behind this prakriti is Krishna, and his deluding potency is acting upon those who are trying to be the enjoyer of that energy. One becomes deluded. Part of the grossest form of delusion is to see that object separate from its source of emanation. That's what right in the purport, right? The highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities who are conditioned by material bodies is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. So take any slice of the cosmic manifestation that you like, or something that somebody is attracted to. You know, take the number one item on the hit parade is male-female attraction. You know, spirit-soul in a female body attracted by a spirit-soul in a male body, and neither of them is the body, but there's some attraction. What's that attraction? It's the illusory potency. We're not meant to be the enjoyer of this body or that body, nor are we this body or that body, but the illusory potency is acting. Or, you know, take the list that Queen Kunti gives. Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Shri. So somebody wants to be beautiful. Somebody wants to be knowledgeable. Somebody wants to have high birth. Somebody wants wealth. And they covet that. There's a deluding potency that's the consequence of trying to be the enjoyer of those things. And the world is filled with such stuff. as Prabhupada described, so many literatures, rubbish literatures, speaking of this crow thing. You know, my main exposure to materialistic society is riding in airplanes and traveling, you know, here and there in airports, and people sit down and boom, they're reading their rubbish literature. You know, the society stories and the, you know, glamour magazines, and the teenage girls have the pop stars and those magazines, and just, you know, rubbish literature. Because they want to be the enjoyer of that. So it's just, but what is it? It's dull matter. But it has this deluding potency. And for a transcendentalist, there's no attraction for that stuff. But because there is attraction for Krishna. It just doesn't act in the same way. If one begins to contemplate those things in the mood of enjoyment, then the deluding potency starts to act. But it's just all matter. As far as the soul is concerned, we have nothing to do with it. Nothing. Yes?
Matter is dead. So like when we do any sense enjoyment, we are dealing with the matter. But how do we get, why we get satisfaction or pleasure in that? Well, soul is not...
It's right within the purport. We have bodies, and the bodies are made up of senses, and the senses contact a sense object, and somebody thinks, oh, that's pleasure. There's something that happens. There's a sensation. But, you know, For one person, let's say, you know, a fan, in the summertime, that's nice. But in the wintertime, oh, that's, I don't, turn that off. I don't like that. It's pain. It's just samsparsha ja. Just contacting the senses and sense objects, and that's not what pleasure is. It's something. It's a sensation. The senses are contacting an object. But we read it as pleasure or pain. Just listening to Prabhupada explain, one man's food is another man's poison. Some like it hot, some like it cold. There's this American little riddle, some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot 9 days old. That's the mode of ignorance. Some like it hot, some like it cold. Passion, ignorance, and good. It's the modes of nature acting. The soul is completely... So what is it? It's the illusory potency. Acting upon the living entity. Because the living entity is identifying with matter. That means the body. So I want pleasure. Hiranya Kashipu. Gold and soft bed. But it's illusion. What's the value of the gold? What's the value of the soft bed? As far as the soul is concerned?
But this senses, when it comes in contact with sense of that soul gets satisfaction, or is that satisfaction in body?
Neither. The sensation, it's certainly not the soul, but even the body, the senses read, but it's just, you know, it's inert matter. Inert matter contacting inert matter. And consciousness is extended through that inert matter because of our misidentification with it. Because of the presence of the soul, and the soul's identifying with matter. So, you know, it reads, now I'm feeling pleasure, now I'm feeling pain. It's the soul And the consciousness of the soul is extending through matter. It's neither pleasure nor pain. It's illusion. What is real pleasure? Real pleasure is the soul contacting the supreme pleasure. And pain is being separated from that. Forgetting our relationship with Krishna, that's pain. Not, you know, burning your finger on the fire.
When you were telling about the translation, you said that anything that is superior to you is not the absolute.
Yeah.
Can there be anything superior than Krishna?
Could you say the question again? They're just the last part?
Can there be anything superior other than the Supreme Personality?
Can there be anything superior other than the Supreme Personality?
Anything that is superior to you is not the absolute.
That's right. So there isn't something. No, another way of, this is another way of saying what Brahma says in the Chatur Sloki verses of the ninth chapter of the second canto. He says, it's same thing stated differently. Listen carefully. If one sees that there's something that exists separate from the Supreme and has its own value separate from the Supreme, know that to be my illusory energy. What is Maya? That's a nice definition. Seeing something as existing separate from the Supreme and having value separate from the Supreme, just in and of itself. There is no such thing. Seeing that is Maya. So now we'll go back to this one. Seeing that there's something that's superior to the Personality of Godhead, that's the illusory energy. That's not something that is superior to the Supreme Personality. It's not absolute. It rather is the illusory energy. Yes.
How do we see things as they are, not yet colored?
By Krishna's mercy. Well, the two things that are mentioned right in that second paragraph, we have to have reception of that mercy. So, by the effort to receive and receiving. Having qualified receiver and have it on. And Krishna gives his mercy. By accepting this human form of life, so Brahma is born, the creation has not yet taken place, so he's looking at his existence and saying, I need to make this existence fit to do that which I'm inspired to do. So we have tendencies along with whatever spiritual aspiration. We also have tendencies, and the answer to your question is we have to take those tendencies and elevate them, connect them to Krishna. That's the Tapo Divyam. And be very eager for receiving Krishna's mercy. Yes.
Visually thinking about the park, the hamsas and the swans, very calm, peaceful birds, and on the other side you see Brahma, he's Koko, surged with passion in the middle of the universe. So it's a very contrasting, fascinating.
No, because one can have, obviously no, because one can have, here he is, he's describing, it's being described in the verse that I read as being surcharged with passion, but it's not like, a wild animal or something. His consciousness is totally refined. But the creative impetus is that mode of passion. I mean, to create a universe, you have to have a lot of creative impetus. But it's properly directed. It's not controlled by that. He's in service to Krishna, utilizing that. It's Krishna that has given him that creative impetus. Because he's a qualified person to create the universe, and Krishna wants the universe created, so he gives it to the qualified person. Now he's being very conscientious to use it in the proper way, by fixing his consciousness upon Krishna, upon Lord Vishnu, here Gambardakshay Vishnu. There's so many others that they as Brahma is seeing Vishnu, all of the demons that Kamsa sent, they also saw Krishna. Washerman wasn't a demon, but he saw Krishna. Shishupal saw Krishna. Duryodhan saw Krishna. Dhritarashtra was blind, but anyway, so many persons saw Krishna but didn't recognize Krishna. Because they were unqualified. They were colored by the modes of nature. But Brahma, in contrast, has, for service to Krishna, he has this creative potency. We'd say, Bhima and Arjuna. Powerful kshatriyas. Prabhupada would describe that Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was inciting Arjuna to anger, explaining that you can't fight without anger. But it's not, a worldly kind of anger. It's a Krishna wants this done kind of a spirit. And so he was inciting Arjuna to that stage. Because he wanted him to do, he didn't need Arjuna to do anything. But he wanted Arjuna to take that service. Sometimes that's not understood in our everyday devotional service. To accomplish, a major task may require like a lot of energy. And a lot of energy, someone might say, hey, I just want to sit and be peaceful. All this lot of energy thing. I can't sit and be peaceful. And there are times to sit and be peaceful, and there are times to be very energetic. And even when one is very energetic, it's not that then just becomes swept away by mode of nature. Stay fixed in Krishna consciousness. I'm running out of steam here. I think I'm going to end. Last question.
You are talking about that Arjuna's anger to fight in that war. So how to understand that anger, that it's in a mode of passion? No, I think it's not in a mode of passion.
Kamesha, Krodesha. Kroda, anger is destruction. So what is destruction? Tamagun. Born from the mode of passion comes destruction. Anger. Does that address your question?
I'm trying to understand the Arjuna's anger is not in the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's for Krishna. Does it make a difference if something is for Krishna or not for Krishna? If that same something is used in Krishna's service, fully, no other purpose than for Krishna's service, it's not within the modes of nature.
So the type of anger is more than the bad.
That's right. That's right.
Even Hanuman's angry
also. That's right. That's right. That's right. He had his nature also. He was an expert diplomat at the same time as, you know, being a Kshatriya. After he found Sita and consoled Sita, he then considered, I want to give these people a warning. Ram will come soon and destroy your kingdom. It was for the glory of Ram. It wasn't. It's a world of difference, the difference between the material world and the spiritual world, that much of a world of difference between something that's used in Krishna's service and something that's one is being used by it in the modes of nature. It's a world of difference. Having to do with everything. Our work, our eating, our social life, family life, you know. Anything. Otherwise, you know, we would, our philosophy would be, go live in a cave. Go live in the forest under a tree. Don't have a house. It makes a difference if something is used in Krishna's service or not. Because otherwise it's passion and ignorance. So to be consistent with the scriptural teachings, have a house, have a family, take responsibility, and so on and so on and so on. It looks like modes of nature, but if it's done in Krishna's service, liberating. So then including, okay, now what about Kshatriya's mode of passion? So no one can be a Kshatriya. Because that's the mode of passion. Then there's no protectors of society. That's terrible. Krishna doesn't teach that. The opposite Krishna is teaching. Protect. Mode of passion. Apparently. But it's service unto Krishna. So one has to deploy what's necessary to do that service to Krishna. Not be controlled by it, as one who is in the mode of passion is controlled by that mode. Brahma is not controlled by that mode, Arjuna is not controlled by that mode, and etc. But the service demands carrying out something. As with anger, it's an important teaching. It's not like, oh, now it's authorized, I can get angry. Maharaj said. Rupa Goswami describes that each thing has its utility in Krishna's service. It's right in Nectar Devotion. Anger has its utility. Krishna has been offended. Ravan stole Sita. Then it has its place. And after accomplishing that service, then it's gone because it doesn't have its place. So it's not being controlled by anger. It's utilizing something in Krishna's service, for Krishna's service. And after that service is over, it's gone. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.